Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
All the time, every time, for you.
Podcast. What antiques are we talking about this week?
Well, this is, I think, a multiple listener request.
Popular demand, one might say.
Yeah, this is a popular demand. I'm pretty sure we've gotten this request more than once. So, we are finally going to look into the eye of the beast and talk about Fiestaware.
Fiestaware?
Fiestaware.
Excellent.
Now, if you're not familiar with Fiestaware, Fiestaware is a pottery that is done in an understated, simple Art Deco style with heavy emphasis on curvature and concentric rings for decoration, but most notably produced in bright, single, solid colors.
Extraordinarily bright and extraordinarily solid colors. They have a very nice, even finish.
Yes, they do. Well, right out the gate, we have a misconception. It turns out it was never called Fiestaware.
What?
The designer Frederick Hurton Reed was actually pissed off for like the first 10 years because people kept calling it Fiestaware. It was only ever meant to be called Fiesta.
Was he unfamiliar with serving ceramics and pottery always having the suffix ware?
I don't know. I think he was just like certain that his design would buck the trend.
Well,
he's like, my brand is Fiesta and people are going to call it Fiesta. And then no one did. And he was like, God fucking damn it.
I mean, if he wanted it to be a single word name, maybe he should have picked something that wasn't already a word being used for other things.
Yeah, I mean, ideally. So, as I have already referenced, it was designed by Frederick Hurton Reed, a already well-known pottery designer at the time in 1936 for Homer Laughlin Pottery. Notably, he came on as a designer well after Mr. Homer Laughlin and his brother Shakespeare Laughlin had left the company, or rather sold it into new management. And yes, their real names were Homer and Shakespeare Laughlin. I think you can make a pretty educated guess about what kind of parents they had.
Fun parents.
I read a bunch of places that, like, Homer Laughlin Pottery is frequently called HLP. I never in my life have I ever heard anyone refer to it as something other than Homer Laughlin.
Really?
Like, Laughlin is the shortest version. I've never seen anyone say HLP. If you have, message us. The introduction of Fiesta, and not Fiestaware, wasn't actually the first time people had introduced a solid single color. And it wasn't even the first time it was successful. What it was the first time anyone had advertised it aggressively. Yeah, there were a lot of forerunners to Fiesta, but none that ended up doing as well because Frederick Hurton Reed immediately began an extremely aggressive ad campaign. And what's more, the other kinds of dishware didn't do what Fiesta did, which was they sold individual pieces as well as sets and encouraged people to mix and match according to their own decorating needs.
Oh, a build-your-own dinnerware set.
A build-your-own dinnerware set. And people thought this was so much fun, it took off pretty easily. Like a lot of things at the time, you may have noticed that I said it was released in 1936, and I bet you can take a wild guess as to what the bright colors were doing on the dishware at the time. They were also pretty close to mass manufactured, which made the selling price pretty cheap, and I bet none of that had to do with the worst economic depression in the country at that time.
Oh, right, that one.
Yeah, we were just coming out of the first depression, Great Depression.
Gotcha.
And that does probably speak to why these brightly colored, incredibly cheerful... A lot of people use the phrase, like, California design sensibility.
Very sunny?
Very sunny. It kind of gives you, like, a sort of sunny, carefree, tropical kind of vibe, almost. They were made in Ohio, so that, I think, speaks to the brilliance of the designer. They were originally developed as semi-vitreous. What that means is that it is an enamel-fired glaze, but the glaze is too thin to completely eliminate porosity in the piece. And by porosity, I mean that the piece can absorb water over time, which will eventually weaken the structure. This is the case with a lot of fine porcelains that are not even semi-vitreous. But later, as they became more popular, they pivoted to develop Fiesta as fully vitreous for durability. Since its heavy feeling and durability was part of its charm and success, only secretly no one knew it wasn't actually as durable as it felt.
Whoops.
It debuted in 5 colors. A red that it was always considered closer to orange, a blue that is now referred to as cobalt, a green that is now referred to as light green, yellow, which hasn't changed a bit, and old ivory, which they stopped calling old in the 1980s for reasons unknown.
Right on.
A year after the original 5 debuted, they added the turquoise color, We're going to talk about colors, like, repeatedly, because the colors of Fiesta, as you may have intuited, are pretty important to literally everything about them.
Because they're the only distinguishing feature between different pieces?
Pretty much. And I'm just going to warn you right now, I didn't bother getting into any of the green drama because, quite frankly, it's so boring.
Wow.
I'm sorry, it's so boring. Green is the color that Fiesta introduced the most frequently and changed the most frequently. It is my lived experience trying to tell Fiesta greens apart, and, like, after all of that time, I am not here to do it again. So I'm sorry, but I will talk about it a little bit. So these six colors are considered kind of like the main six and are usually a focus for a lot of like hardcore vintage collectors. Although later they would go on to introduce, oh, just so many colors. In the 1950s, they introduced gray, rose, chartreuse, and forest green, which were actually discontinued after only 8 years. And you're already maybe seeing the themes of too many greens. For the love of God, please God, would they stop with the greens. It debuted in 34 pieces of pretty much every kind of dishware you can imagine. Coffee pots, 17 distinct kinds of cup, carafes, candle holders, vases, and more. Eventually, over time, the interest in Fiesta completely flagged in 1969. After a desperate attempt to revive interest by replacing several colors with slightly different versions of the same colors, and Fiesta was shut down completely in 1972.
Oh.
Until Homer Laughlin remained a company till now. And in 1986, due to demand, they ended up reintroducing Fiesta. So what you have is two distinct eras of Fiesta wear.
Oh.
On one, you've got 1936 to 1972 being considered vintage Fiesta wear. And 1986 to the present is contemporary Fiesta wear. They introduced a new color this year. My sister is a big fan of it. I don't know what it's called, but it is a butternut squash color. Very cool, actually.
Cool squash.
All of the colors actually have pretty rigid date structures, to the point where if you can tell the many disparate greens apart, you can actually come up with a pretty reliable dating pattern for them. For example, the cobalt blue ran from 1936 to 1951. The medium green, which I believe is the rarest color, only ran from 1959 to 1969. Forest green ran from 1951 to 1959, so on and so forth. There are lots of charts of this stuff. One of the really, really interesting things about Fiesta was that the first year of their manufacture, they just started jettisoning patterns at seemingly random, because no matter where I looked, could I find like a justification of why they decided that certain things wouldn't work out. I know very famously the covered onion soup bowl was released for, I think, 6 months before they just decided they did not want it happening.
They realized no one was making onion soup.
In retrospect, it is a hyper-specific piece. But, like, I think this follows to a lesser degree with the covered cream soup bowls. And I do wonder how many different soup bowls were on the design docket that didn't make it through even to the like, six-month release.
I wonder what happens when you put a non-onion-based soup into the onion soup bowl.
I'm pretty sure Mr. Homer Laughlin runs into your room and kills you.
Aw, boo.
He drowns you in your non-onion soup bowl. And he says, you could have bought the specific soup that corresponded.
How disappointing.
Also jettisoned at the end of the year-long original campaign was a 12-compartment serving dish that I understand. That seems like way more compartments than anyone needs. And less understandable, the lidded mixing bowl sets, which sounds awesome and I want one. These were also designed, like a lot of very popular mixing bowl sets, so that when they nested inside each other, they were perfectly flat. But they had lids, so that when you were working on multiple things, you could cover one.
How convenient.
So all of those are considered extremely rare. Like I said, most of them had under an entire year of being released, so there's not a lot out there. I think, generally, onion soup bowl is like the grail.
What, with the six-month window and all?
Yeah, for only 6 months. Other really rare pieces include the gray rose, chartreuse, and forest green I mentioned, as they only ran for 8 years. Very, very desirable. Good luck telling the greens apart. I dare you. Actually, there's like a handful of contemporary Fiesta that is actually collectible because they learned that a limited color would become rare and valuable. It's like starting in the 1990s, they were just like, oh, we've got Baby's Bottom Pink only for 3 months at JCPenney. Other things that are considered desirable and rare include complete sets because people were generally less interested in them.
Really? Oh, because the whole appeal is mix and match?
Yeah, when the whole appeal is mix and match, it's someone having a complete set of a single color is pretty unusual.
Huh.
Undamaged vases. The vases only ran for 2 years. they didn't prove to be very popular, and a lot of the ones that are out there, since it was a usable item, are pretty mucked up. So the less damage a vase has, the more it's worth, and it's already pretty rare. And like I said, medium green of all the colors had the shortest run, and as such, is very rare. However, medium green is easily confused for two other greens, including forest green and deep green. There's also some scuttlebutt about the original color red.
This I have heard of.
Yes, it ran from 1936 to 1943. It was discontinued in 1943 for munitions manufacture, which is something you love to hear about your dishes. It was briefly revived minus the original color in 1959 until the end of the vintage Fiesta Ware run, rather, 1972. That is because it contained uranium oxide.
Oopsies.
And if you want to know if the old reds are safe to eat off of, the consensus is who knows.
So maybe just don't.
A lot of people say maybe just don't. The FDA has formally stated that it does not fit the minimum requirements to sit for them to say absolutely do not. I believe if you ate off of it for a year, it would come at like 40 ppm of radium concentration in your body, which is under the benchmark, but it sounds like a lot more than I want.
Yeah.
So there you go. A lot of the other colors, like a lot of vintage plates, do contain lead. This is another sticky wicket. That's really going to boil down to how you personally feel. Most people will actually say the lead isn't a problem if there isn't any cracking or pitting in the glaze or other signs of glaze deterioration.
Weren't these originally made with porous glaze in the first place?
The earliest ones were made with porous glaze, and they will be more dangerous, yes.
For more on that, check out our Danger Lead Poisoning episode.
Yeah, please do. I also found a really great resource called Lead Safe Mama at tamararubin.com. Or you can just Google Lead Safe Mama. She actually does lead testing on various vintage plates, including Fiesta plates, and shows you her findings and compares it to the safe threshold for children's consumption.
Nice.
Which I think is fabulous. I think it's an absolutely great resource for you to personally make the determination about whether or not it's safe. And it does show consistency with the older pieces being leaking more lead into the plate. So please consider checking out that resource. It's really interesting.
Hell yeah.
Especially if you have kids. Now you might be saying, but there's two different kinds of Fiesta. How am I supposed to know which ones are old? To that I say, good luck, but I always say that, so... This is a pretty well-known area of study.
We've nailed it down?
Yeah. You look at several things. The shape of the piece, the glaze color, the decoration or patterning, and the Fiesta mark itself. Like a lot of pieces, you get a wet foot on older pieces. What this means, as we've discussed in other pottery-ish things, talks, whatevers, it means that the bottom of the piece will be covered in glaze, where the foot rests on the stand. And in new pieces, the bottom of the foot is unglazed.
Oh.
And this is pretty solid. Although, when you get to the end of the, 1970s, it becomes a little less. But I got other tips for you for that. There's also sizing. Vintage Fiesta ware is almost never solid dimensions like 15 inches or 6 inches straight right out. So if you measure the diameter of a piece of Fiesta and you don't have a whole number, it's a good chance it's vintage. This speaks to more hand-making being involved in the older pieces. Because when a machine's spitting it out, you get a solid number every time. You can also look at, certain design elements. In the teacups, the vintage teacups have, a perfectly circular little handle, which I have always found both charming and frustrating for use. And the contemporary pieces, they have more of an oblong shape so you can actually fit your bloody fingers through it. Which, while useful, isn't quite as charming.
The perfectly round handles are extremely cute, but they're also very small.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever tried to actually use these. It's small and a little frustrating.
A little frustrating?
Hey-oh. There's actually a lot of these, really little in the milk pitchers. In the originals, of course, it's an unbroken curve. But in the new ones, there is actually a divot under the top of the handle for your finger to slot into so you don't fumble it.
Nice.
Yeah. There's also the tricky bits that you probably get more into the, deeper you get into learning about Fiesta, which is the heft and the weight of the clay. Vintage Fiesta is always heavier, heavier and more robust. But, if you're just getting started, that's not going to be super helpful. And you're in luck because there are other things that are super helpful. But I do need to mention it. The markings are convoluted, but not necessarily as convoluted as other marking issues. Most of the early pieces are stamped. Later, these stamps would be paired with numbers and or letters. I do have a website for you to go to demystify what these letters and numbers mean. For example, the older stamp always has genuine fiesta, with fiesta in a stylized but all lowercase. If the fiesta is entirely uppercase, it's a modern piece. This only applies to stamp markings. There were incised or molded in markings where the letters were uppercase that are vintage, but so specifically for a black ink stamp under the glaze. If there's a capital H on an in-mold mark, or a debossed mark, it is a post-1986 piece. If it says lead-free, that is not a vintage piece whatsoever, as we've discussed earlier. This is a great time to cut in and say, if you want Fiesta Ware to eat off of, you can get all of the original colors in contemporary Fiesta Ware, and it is all guaranteed to be lead-free.
Hooray!
Three-letter codes indicate any production past 1992. And other than that, it's pretty solid. The vintage pieces will be either molded in with lowercase Fiesta or stamped with lowercase Fiesta. And I got more for you if you go to laurelhollowparka.net/HLC/HLC backstamps. They have an absolutely exhaustive decoding of all of the vintage backstamps, what they mean and what year they represent. And there's a lot, which is why I didn't say them here. There's also other, like I said, other little like production things. The nesting bowls from the first year actually have circles incised into the bottom that match the concentric rings that decorate the pieces.
Oh.
So if you're concerned that a nesting bowl seems a little too good to be true, might be a fake, that's a good thing to look for. Because it's unusual and most people wouldn't have copied it.
Good to know.
Other than that, it's pretty easy to identify fakes. Just because the concentric rings are very specific to Fiesta and are almost never copied. That plus the markings, most markings past the first 5 years of production, like they said, have the numbers or letters which were not copied very often and do allow a certain degree of legitimacy. Once you see the concentric rings that decorate the pieces on genuine Fiesta, you never unsee it, and everything else looks wrong to you. There is one sticky wicket, which is that Homer Laughlin itself copied Fiesta twice.
Wait, hang on.
I guess if you're a real HLC head, people do not like you calling these copycats. They prefer the term sister lines, but it seems like Homer Laughlin was just trying to double down its success by just continually reintroducing Fiesta with different names. The lines were Harlequin and Riviera, and while they featured the same bright colors, often like identical to the glazes used in Fiesta, the designs were different, and that was ostensibly their purpose, was if you didn't like the Art Deco design of Fiesta, Harlequin had a more Art Nouveau design and Riviera had less design in general, it was more plain.
Okay.
But you run into people selling these as Fiesta a lot, and if you are a purist about this and don't want just any old bright colored Homer Laughlin piece, you gotta be on the lookout. Again, this is a little bit easier because neither of them have the concentric Art Deco rings or styling. That's it for Fiesta. It's weird. Telling the greens apart is entirely a matter of getting all of the greens together in one place. In 15 years, I have never successfully done it. I do know a lot of people who have, although most of them actually have monikers that include the word Fiesta in them, so that tells you a little bit about their dedication to the matter. And of course, now that we live in the information age, there's a lot of websites that'll provide lineups so that'll help you determine what green you have.
Very good.
Before we get into sources, I also want to add in another really excellent price guide, happyheidi.com Fiesta Price Guide. It is not only a wonderful general price guide, it provides information alongside the changes in price from color, year, and shape. It actually makes a really great starting point if you want to start getting familiar with what pieces were made and when. Because it's really complicated, right? It's like a kaleidoscope of value based on color and shape and year of production. And I find happyheidi.com to be a wonderful resource for kind of unraveling all of that. There is also, cannot recommend it enough, of course could only use like a quarter of this for talking about it, drivingfordeco.com, they have a well over 10-part series called A Course for Beginner Collectors. I think that is a euphemism. I don't know that I'd throw a beginner into all of this. What it essentially is a year-by-year breakdown of everything Fiesta did ever.
Okay.
We also have collectorsweekly.com, their article on Fiesta, estatesales.org, the complete guide to Fiesta ceramics, and causafracas.com. How to tell old Fiesta ware from new.
All right. If you would like to show us your Fiesta ware collections, you can email us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. You can hit up our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, our subreddit, r/antiquesfreaks, or tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com.
The Etsy is now reopened, currently only features our t-shirts and stickers, but it does feature our t-shirts and stickers, which I think is wonderful.
And that's at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks.
If you enjoyed all of this information about bright colors from the Depression era, consider scrolling on down to your, wherever you're listening to this podcast, and leave us a review, perhaps saying, that was a weird lead into saying, leave us a review. You didn't have to recap the entire episode. No matter what you have to say, leaving us a review helps us immensely.
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes, including a special audio commentary track for the movie The Little Stranger that we recorded with our friends at the Terrible Book Club podcast, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
And I recommend it. It's a good time.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and filling our hearts with love.
So much love.
And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right, you.
Goodbye.
Bye.